Biden is significantly outpolling Bernier. Or, I've had too much beer.
Santa buddy, fill my stocking with Canucks ticks for kicks. Throw me on the first line, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight.
Coming to you from the West Coast, this is Politicoast. This is episode 118, the year-end extravaganza. Politicoast is the BC politics podcast. Tell us what you think of the show by leaving us a review and get at us on social media. Most importantly, help us keep building this show by throwing us a couple bucks a month at patreon.com/politicoast.
I'm Scott Lineboom.
And I'm Ian Bushfield. In our end-of-year special, we're going to go over last year's predictions, which we had to dig up from episode 67. We're going to look back at all of the various episodes we put out this year, and we're going to make a bunch of predictions for 2019 that you can then hold us to account for. And just for full disclosure, we're recording this right after we recorded episode 117. We're continuing to drink some delicious festive-themed beer. We finished off Bridge Brewing's The Grinch Winter Seasonal Ale for episode 117, and now we're drinking Krampus from Strange Fellows Brewing, which is a Belgian-style double. That is delicious, but it's like 8.5% to 9%.
And if you're a local brewery who wants to have your beer called out on regular occasion, do drop us a line because we are open to sponsorship.
Yeah, for as little as free beer, but ideally also with money. As it's December 19th still, we don't know the results of the electoral reform referendum yet. In theory, we should know them by the time this episode drops next week. But who knows? Something unpredictable could happen. Once we get to our predictions from last year, we'll find out how wrong we were on some fronts and some things we had no clue were coming. You know, maybe Elections BC announces massive voter fraud and we won't know results until February because they have to pull out all these fake ballots or something.
Stop, you're getting Wilkinson too excited.
Okay. Well, let's get into what we predicted last year. And as a reminder, go back, listen to episode 67 if you really want. But we started off with predictions at the federal level. If you'll recall, a full year ago, the big story nationally was Bill Morneau was in scandal after scandal.
There's a French villa involved. Like, it was a thing.
They were rolling out these tax changes that affected doctors and lawyers, like the most able to make a lot of noise in the media people. So we were both pretty pessimistic about Bill Morneau's future in politics.
But we called it wrong. He is still in cabinet.
Yeah.
And so far hasn't given any indication he's leaving politics.
Yeah. It actually seems like he's had a really good year by contrast to last year. He kept his head down, passed some decent budgets. You know, there's still lots of criticism from the conservatives, but he did okay.
Not drawn the fire he was before.
Yeah. One of the things I predicted was with Mulcair probably leaving politics, he did, that would open up Outremont for a by-election, which I predicted the Liberals would win. Turns out they didn't even call the by-election. So joke's on me.
And I predicted that the Liberals would continue to outpoll the other parties, but the gap would close. And looking at where we are right now on CBC's poll tracker, they are at 36 to the Conservatives' 33. So it's closer than it was, but the Liberals have more or less stayed ahead in the polls, barring some, you know, minor fluctuations over the year.
I don't think either of us predicted or would have predicted the weakness of the NDP over this year.
Yeah, I was a little pessimistic on them, I think, but...
But I think they did worse than either of us would have expected.
Yes.
Yeah.
I expected, well, Jake Meat to be a presence in politics.
He got married.
So that happened.
That's not politics, though.
So, yeah, he's still doesn't have a seat, still basically completely out of the media spotlight, and, well, the NDP seem to be spinning their wheels in the meantime.
Yeah, we talked a lot in our predictions, because we only listened to bits of it and we're going off some of our notes, about him wanting to run in Toronto or maybe a seat open up in Brampton. Maybe he'd run in Outremont.
Well, there is a seat open in Brampton, turns out.
No, there's not actually now. He announced he's sticking through politics.
Well, no, they're still... Oh, the guy didn't... The Liberals not...
Yeah, he didn't resign. He didn't file his papers. That was a stupid story. Anyway,
I missed that.
So Jagmeet can't run in Brampton unless maybe what's-his-face doesn't run in the next election, which would seem like a good idea. But we did not expect a Burnaby opening, which we'll get to. in a bit.
Yes, and why we didn't spend, that's a little amusing, but we put that off until we go through the provincial ones first. So both of us were fairly positive on Andrew Wilkinson going into it. You called it for him, and I was thinking it was a toss-up between him and Stone, and really I should have had Michael Lee, and Watts actually further up on that one too. But, you know, I still didn't claim credit for calling Wilkinson as one of the two most likely.
At least I didn't try to pin down the order that he would get to win, or we didn't try to get into that, but, you know, I'll take a win's a win. I think it was very early in the BC Liberal leadership race when we made those predictions, so...
It was right before the membership cut off.
Yeah, it was right around that time. So
it's been going on for a couple months. There's about a month left in it.
We knew who the main characters were, but yeah. We didn't have a sense of who was leading.
We knew Sam Sullivan wasn't.
Leading.
Yes.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was still a little up in the air.
There was no provincial election this year. I think we're fairly confident that wouldn't happen. The Greens were pretty chummy with the NDP at the time and continue to be, despite a few saber-rattling episodes with Andrew Weaver over the year. And most importantly, the BC Conservatives continue to be a joke.
It's not what you can say on them, really.
I just think my favorite part of them this year was their non-position on electoral reform. That was, we're not actually taking a position on this debate, but let me tell you every reason why the BC Liberals are wrong to oppose it.
Which really just goes to show how positions on electoral reform are more positional than principle.
Yeah. You did predict, I think, that electoral reform would fail, and I guess listeners can judge whether you were right or wrong, because we don't know. But you did predict Patrick Brown would win in Ontario.
Yeah, so did not expect the set scandal, but I think the rationale was more or less right on why the leader of the Conservatives would win. Admittedly, I thought Ford would have a worse chance if he, you know, once it became clear he was going to be the leader, you know, it seemed like he was going to have more of an uphill battle because, well, he's Ford. But the ground and kind of the fundamentals in Ontario were so heavily in the PC's favor, it was a pretty safe bet that if Patrick Brown hadn't imploded in scandal, he would be premier.
Yeah, I don't know many people who could have predicted what happened in Ontario this year who would have gotten it all right. But the fact that the win Liberals were massively unpopular was a safe bet. So moving to municipal politics, because at the time we were still covering Vancouver fairly heavily, I was pretty bullish on Gregor Robertson for some reason. When it turned out like the next week after we released that episode, he resigned. We're like,
announced he wasn't going to run again.
So
that was a bit off. I don't think any of us figured quite how crazy the Vancouver election was going to be. And, you know, you listen to the Canby Report back catalog to get the full story on that one. But yeah, Gregor Robertson did not stick around. Although you were right that Vision lost control of council, but in a very big way.
Even like days before the election, I was still thinking at least Heather Deal would get reelected because she's an incumbent and people don't tend to just like massively revolt against incumbents, but apparently they do when they've been around a decade and the city has decided they are the cause of everything that is wrong in their lives. I talked a bit about other housing policies, that the housing reset would continue to be put off. I think it actually did get passed technically, but given that the city is now like reconsidering duplex zoning, I stand by my prediction that they are continuing to put off solving the housing crisis in the city.
Yeah, it's right with an asterisk, I think, because it's, I don't know, you need a flowchart to understand where things are right now with that.
But you predicted a NPA mayor and council.
So they got half the council seats and within spinning distance of becoming mayor, but they didn't actually get the top job, so it's like a half point there, I guess.
Yeah. It was such an unpredictable election.
Yeah. Now, it got much more unpredictable after we did these predictions, but...
Well, and once Gregor dropped out, that opened up the room for Kennedy Stewart to jump in, and that led to Jagmeet Singh announcing his run over here. So who could have predicted any of that?
Yep, it's been a weird year out here on that front. I also thought the Greens would do well and get a second councillor. They managed to elect three
of the four they ran.
Yeah, so I mean I think Greens overall in Canada are kind of on a upswing at all levels.
Yeah.
And you had a couple of kind of miscellaneous predictions as well.
Yeah, I don't think these were specific enough to merit points or not. I think I said something about, you know, free speech debate will continue to be the most exhausting debate. I can claim victory on that, but that feels...
I feel like there are more exhausting debates.
In this last year?
Brexit, maybe?
If you're in England, for sure. There might have been less campus issues. It just depends on what corner of Twitter you are on.
I feel like I've gotten better at tuning them out, so maybe I don't really have it. A great sense of whether or not they're just more of them or I'm ignoring them in a better way.
And I expected also a like major white supremacist rally, and it's gotten so blurry now because like in Alberta, there's the yellow vest protests trying to mimic the French ones, except they're all carrying these like anti-UN global compact on migration signs that you're like, what? So does that count? I mean, there's been a lot of big exposés on white supremacists in Canada and their connections with various conservative parties. And I don't know if we've seen a big rally.
Yeah, like there
hasn't been a Charlottesville, Canada.
Yeah, there's been rallies. What the dividing line on major is fuzzy and probably hasn't been crossed. But, you know, any is too many. So, yeah, how do you count that?
I mean, they have influence in some of the major parties in Canada. So do I count that as Ian got something right, but also...
You know, you might not want to be right on this one. So
that's what I'm thinking.
And also... Because we were more organized last year, we actually threw some of these questions over to Twitter as well, and our listeners, and we may have stuff up by the time you actually listen to this for next year, but we asked our Twitter followers what they thought about the electoral reform referendum. 66% felt it was going to pass, which I think might be a little bullish, but
we'll see. Know right now if you are correct.
Yeah, hopefully you'll know. On the Liberal leadership, 35% for Stone, 30% for Wilkinson. So not a bad call there either.
We did include Mike DeYoung and Sam Sullivan on the poll as well. We couldn't fit Michael Lee or Diane Watts because of
and I'm not sure. I'm not sure what we were thinking at the time, because those two definitely should have been on the poll when DeYoung should not have been.
Or Sullivan.
Yes.
But 13% of people thought Sam Sullivan was going to win, so... You have egg on your face. The egg on my face is putting Gene Swanson on the list for next Vancouver mayor alongside someone from the NPA, Gregor Robertson, and just other. But 42% of people picked Swanson, and she is on council.
Yeah, I think that says more about our Twitter followers than anything else, because that was always a long shot for mayor.
And I think also out of those four choices, 22% of people thought Robertson would win, 28% the NPA, and that may have been a I don't want them to win.
Yeah, I feel like people were underestimating their chance. So like realistically, they had at least a 50% chance of winning.
81% of people did think the Green DP government would last, and they were correct. Similarly, 2/3 of people thought Trump would make it through 2018 as president, and they were also correct.
We still have a couple weeks.
That's true. Maybe he'll resign by Christmas. That'll be a nice gift for everyone.
Probably not going to happen, though. And... We also asked on the midterms, 38% thought the Democrats would sweep both the House and the Senate.
I think I voted for that wishfully.
Yeah, the more realistic one, just based on the math that turned out to be right, was House but not Senate at 31. And then, interestingly, 27% thought the Democrats would take the Senate but not the House.
Just...
Is an odd choice.
It could have happened.
I think 538 had it like at like a 1 in 10 odd, so it wasn't... Like, insanely crazy, but, like, it was definitely not the most likely outcome. So, yeah, we'll perhaps have something for you to comment on by the time this goes up. We'll see. But do follow us on social media so you can, in fact, see our Twitter polls and everything where we ask about, you know, what crazy stuff will happen in 2019.
Well, we released, I don't know, like, 50, essentially 52 episodes this year. We have not missed a week. Plus, there was a bonus in there, so... Let's run through the highlights month by month. January, every month was really busy, except I think
like
July.
Middle of the summer, yeah.
Yeah. But in January, we had Gregor Robertson resign, which suddenly blew Vancouver politics way up. Alberta and Saskatchewan got in a trade war over license plates, which was bizarre.
Might have been the dumbest thing Canadian politics all year. And keep in mind, we bought a pipeline.
I mean, the most trivial.
Yes.
Trivially dumb. And on episode 70, it was, I thought, a really good episode because we talked about Me Too kind of hitting Canadian politics, as in this 1 week, the Nova Scotia Progressive Conservative leader, Jamie Bailey, stepped down. Patrick Brown, who we already talked about from the Ontario PC, stepped down. And Kent Hare resigned from cabinet following allegations against him. So we brought on Aaron Rennie from Pod Keep Our Land to sort of help break that down. And, well, I don't actually know what's happened in Nova Scotia politics since.
I have admittedly not followed it.
That has, at least in Ontario and at the federal level for the Liberals' chances in Alberta, been significant. I mean, Kent Hare is back in caucus now, but he doesn't have his cabinet position and his stature is much different than it was. Patrick Brown's had a bizarre year.
Yeah, he ended up going for like one of the municipal things they had.
And then Doug Ford tried to change the rules to prevent him from getting it.
Because
so he went from
Doug
else.
Ford's the most petty person out there, possibly. Yeah. And the whole thing's weird. And then in February, Andrew Wilkinson became leader, as we mentioned. The provincial trade wars added a new level of weird and dumb as the wine war broke out. Over whether or not BC would accept Alberta oil, and then Alberta stopped taking BC wine. Eventually, that kind of got resolved, but it was just this weird moment.
Yeah, you had socialists drinking or environmentalists drinking BC wine out of some kind of faux provincial nationalism, and Albertans like boycotting it and going for, I don't know, Alberta craft beer instead. I think around this time, following that Alberta-Saskatchewan plate war, which was also to deal with like craft brewing, alcohol has played a surprising amount of issue in trade wars in this province, and we'll get to the Comeau ruling later in this country.
We also had the throne speech, budget. The Liberals picked up Kelowna West in a shocking, shocking victory there.
And Micah is still complaining that I titled an episode segment on episode 73, Micah was wrong because the aquarium
ruling went in an unexpected direction.
What was the ultimate decision there? That they sided with the aquarium over the park board, correct, I think. When Micah thought the park board would have the authority to ban cetaceans, and the aquarium apparently won on technicalities and other grounds, and then ultimately decided to not have cetaceans anymore anyway. March saw the federal budget come down. And that was the month we actually secured our partnership with BC Today. And it was the first time we had Shannon Waters on the show. And she's been a regular guest since then. And I think one of our most popular. And we've been getting great content through that partnership since then. And been able to really know what's going on in this province. The provincial government also decided that we would not participate in the World Cup bid that was going on.
Which was a smart decision when you looked at the crazy requirements that FIFA had and how much it would cost, and we'd get like 3 games out of it, and like all the soccer fans were really, really angry, but this was absolutely the right move.
Yeah, 100%.
Also, you launched a spinoff podcast.
Yeah, Canby Report took off. You got more involved in local politics, and we had conversations to talk about how to handle the podcast, and we decided to stop talking about local politics and focus on provincial and federal, and I think that's been a good decision for the show, despite how busy and fun local politics has been.
Yeah, it was crazy your local politics, but yeah, Canby Report's really exploded and kind of became a staple almost of local media here.
We still get more downloads than Canby Report, though.
Yeah. So. And I know we have listeners in other parts of the province who are not super stoked about the very niche Vancouver politics segments. So, yeah, I think it's probably actually strengthened both shows.
You mean our segment in late 2017 about the Northeast False Creek development plan was not among the highlights of people's 2017 listening?
Well, it wasn't for me, but like most other people are not me. So, yeah, that was not super thrilling content.
But yeah, Canby Report's been a huge success and big part of my life this last year, because it does not have as regular of a schedule as this, but has produced almost more frequent content than this because of just how wild the municipal election was. Our initial plan for that show was to go every 2 weeks until like the election, and then we thought we might have to pick it up to a weekly. And instead, it was like weekly through the entire fucking summer. And then at some points, we were dropping almost a thing a day because we had so many candidate interviews and we spoke to most of the mayoral candidates and people were tweeting at us. We held monthly live shows. I was very busy. Plus, I have a job.
Well, there's some good content came out of that.
Yeah.
Including a paper that you're going to be working on, correct?
Yeah. So halfway through there, we brought Stuart Prest on, who's been a guest on Politicoast a couple times as well. And we talked about this idea of an urbanist axis, the idea of more urban city. Yes, Vancouver, one city wants to build up dense neighborhoods and transit everywhere, or keep the status quo, the NPA, or maybe COPE to some extent kind of approach. And that third approach to politics formed something we developed into a graph of where do the political parties sit. And now Stuart Prest and I are writing a paper for a political conference in the new year. And I don't know, I keep putting my master's of science in physics to improper uses, I guess. But I guess that's the news story I wanted to break this year, because the Globe and Mail picked up that graph as an part of its explainer on the Vancouver election, which was bizarre. But also in March, we talked about a few other things. One of my favorite episodes was talking with Jesse Woodward in episode 79 about Nanaimo politics, if we're going to stay on the local politics, and just how wild and wacky it is. You know, you had former staff members talking about how they wanted to shoot the mayor in the head, and what? It's a little bit of a slow burn to get into that interview, but please go back and listen to it, because Nanaimo, I think, is calm down now that Leonard Krogh is going to be
hopefully
mayor.
But it's actually quite an interesting story about this very like minor issue around like some infrastructure repair work they had to do spiraled out into this massive political dysfunction. So yeah, do go back and give that one a listen back in episode 79.
And the NDP also announced in March that we are going to throw a whole bunch of subsidies at LNG, and that paid off later, as we'll find out.
And then in April, we did what was probably one of my favorite episodes, when we talked to Richard Zussman and Rob Shaw about the Matter of Confidence book they wrote.
That was a ton of fun for me, too.
Oh, yeah. No, great interview. Go give that a listen in episode 80. And, you know, one of the best books that came out this year, I think, especially in the political space. And, yeah, just tell us the whole story of the events both leading up to the 2017 election and subsequent fallout and kerfuffle, and, well, those events themselves.
April was also a very complicated month on the pipeline file, as Kinder Morgan dropped its ultimatum that if it didn't have a result by the end of May, they were just going to give up on the pipeline because the BC government had been saber-rattling so much and talking about this reference question that they were going to file later. So we had this ongoing debate about, oh, is this pipeline doomed? Yada, yada, yada. BC brought through its reference question, which I think is still sitting before the court. I don't think it's actually been heard yet.
Yeah, I don't think that question's been resolved yet. So that's something we'll be watching for in 2019.
And it's worth mentioning that BC's reference question wasn't technically, can we stop the pipeline? But it was around a set of environmental regulations that would stop the pipeline. And other things. We also got the Como ruling.
Yes, turns out the beer shall not be free in Canada. I think we're hopeful on this one, even if the legal arguments didn't go super great for the Como team at the Supreme Court.
This is a case that dealt with interprovincial trade barriers that prevent you from carrying a six-pack of beer from one province to another.
Although in Como's case, it was a little more than a six-pack.
It was like a truckload.
Yeah, like he loaded up, drove across the bridge to Quebec, filled the back of his car, drove back. The RCMP apparently had a whole sting operation going on this, ticketed him. He argued that it was unconstitutional, brought it to the Supreme Court. I would have liked it to have turned out to be so, because provincial trade barriers are kind of dumb and like we should be able to freely exchange goods within Canada. But apparently the Supreme Court doesn't agree, and well, the politicians have been slow to make this union actually a union. So, you know, that's 100 and some odd years in the making. Still a little bit of work to do on the whole Canada project on that front.
BC also dropped its cannabis legislation in April, which passed the legislature later that session, and turns out doesn't allow us to have cannabis stores in Metro Vancouver. I think that's also part on the cities for not getting their regulations in line because they were busy having elections. But, you know, April, busy month.
Yep. So in May, the school tax, which had actually been announced back in February's budget, that kind of ramped up into a bunch of protests where, you know, people drove their very expensive luxury cars to a park to stand around with signs in what might be Vancouver's least sympathetic protest of all time.
Yeah, it also involved people calling out UBC housing economist Tom Davidoff for saying this isn't an unreasonable tax, and they were suddenly calling for him to be fired for it. So we brought him on the podcast to further his free speech rather than let him be censored. It was a weird time.
Still, the whole thing's still a little weird. Like it came before the Vancouver Council the other day to raise a stink about it. But anyway, that issue hasn't gone away.
They're still talking about recalling Eby, David Eby. But they have to know recall campaigns are almost impossible. But the NDP did get in some real heat in May when it came out that some of their junior ministers were not keeping good records of their emails. One minister, I think, was caught having said, I just didn't send any emails for like 3 months, which sounds like a lie. This came after the Liberals were doing some really good FOI work and trying to say, you know, what's all the correspondence between this minister and other people? And they're like, well, it turns out there's no records. And it kind of put egg on the face after the NDP had criticized the Liberals for the triple delete scandal and all these other controversies. But it kind of died down after that. But the Liberals definitely tried to play the but their emails thing. I don't know. It got weirdly tied to Hillary Clinton's emails. I think we're all bitter in Canada about the fact Donald Trump is president.
Yes, brought a weird layer to all any email scandal now.
And like, this is a bad thing for the NDP to have done, but it's hard to take seriously.
Yeah, it's really weird. Like, almost you can get away with more with email scandals because it seems so, like, just uncomfortable to do that, like, but the emails thing. Like, it's a weird place we're in right now. 2018's been a weird year.
The end of May was the deadline for Kinder Morgan to get some security that their pipeline would go through. Canada initially, at the federal level, offered some indemnity to cover all the legal costs BC was going to cause them. They also won some things in courts. Alberta was threatening to shut off the taps to BC, and BC was going to sue to prevent them from doing that. It all kind of came to a head at the end of May when Canada just announced, we'll just buy Trans Mountain's pipeline.
Which admittedly was not something I had in my 2018 predictions.
No.
I don't think many people saw this coming.
I think I was feeling confident the pipeline wouldn't move forward.
Yeah.
Which is true.
I mean, you were talking about how we should nationalize it at one point, I think, jokingly. But
damn. Didn't want to be right on that. So yeah, we as a country spent
pipeline.
Yeah, $4.5 billion or whatever it was, plus whatever we'll owe to finish it.
I think that was $12 billion to finish the project. Which, as we'll get to in a little bit, might not be going ahead because of some lawsuits and court rulings.
Well, after buying a pipeline, Canada decided, well, I guess we didn't decide to, but we ended up getting in a trade war with the U.S. as both countries started launching tariffs at each other. The U.S. launched a bunch, I think, first, and then we responded with a bunch of retaliatory tariffs on everything from maple syrup to inflatable mattresses. Just targeting key ridings is how it worked out. But it was very bizarre to look at first.
Yeah. Like, I think Kentucky whiskey or bourbon. Bourbon, we hit with the tariff, but like other stuff we didn't. Like, it was very much a target each and every district where that could potentially sway people. And that still is kind of out there. Like, we still haven't fully resolved the steel issue yet. So we got the NAFTA 2.0 thing going through, but there's still some inky stuff around steel. So that was fun. Everything's now more expensive here to build. But also that month, Doug Ford won the Ontario election. Andrew Scheer kicked Bernier out of the shadow cabinet.
This followed like random comments that leaked about him again criticizing the conservative position on supply management.
And like a book he'd written that had a segment of, well, where like a section had leaked about how false conservatives had given Andrew Scheer the leadership.
It was a book he'd written, but then decided not to go through with publishing, but then just published a chapter of it on his own blog that said all the shitty things he could about Andrew Scheer's leadership and supply management. It was a great time for the Conservative Party. But Leonard Krogh also announced that same week he was going to run for mayor of Nanaimo, which put a big question mark hanging over the BC NDP government, which kind of still
lingering.
Lingers. But we also launched our new logo, and I think that was the big news of June, and I hope everyone likes it. My other big news of June was I was involved in the Trinity Western University lawsuit over their law school, and my side won. TW does not get its law school. We found out about that, and you can hear more about that on episode 91. And the following week, we had a good interview with David Eby when the Dirty Money Report came out, basically exposing that the BC government is in the midst of a crime syndicate and like money laundering ring. So we get a significant amount of money through our BC casinos of just like organized crime exploiting them.
And like it was bad, like people showing up with like walking probable cause in the form of like bills, just
hockey bags full of cash.
Yeah,
they have pictures like of hockey shopping bags.
And like shopping bags, like bills with rubber bands around them, like literally could not be more suspicious.
July was much quieter though. We did a number of interviews to help fill the month, but I think they were good interviews. One of my favorites was our discussion with Adam Olson from the BC Greens on nothing but salmon. It took a few weeks to line this up, but I was so glad we did, because salmon is important to this province, but neither of us actually know that much about it, and Adam Olson knows everything. He's obviously partisan on it, but no one really questions that he cares.
Mm-hmm.
And we also released interviews in late June and early July on proportional representation. We talked to Sean Graham, who invented the dual member proportional system, which I'm just going to assume we have not picked, despite
that's likely
its uniqueness. And we talked to Keith Poor from Fair Vote Canada. And I talked to Patrick Meehan about housing on campuses and how the government has just made it easier.
This one weird trick,
yeah,
to allow more housing on campus.
Allow universities to take out loans to build student housing because it pays for itself.
Yeah. Also, like large capital investments, that's kind of what loans are there for. So yeah, good call on the government's part. Then in August, Jagmeet Singh finally announced that he was going to run for office in Burnaby South, which we are still waiting on the by-election for that. And, you know, I guess good for Jagmeet because his name was finally in the news for once.
At least out here. And he's starting to build a profile. I've been trying to get an interview with him. He was supposedly maybe available this week, but that's not happening, but hopefully.
Honestly, he
could
use the exposure. Like, we don't have a huge listener base, but like his media presence has been so terrible. Like, this might actually be a boost for him.
That's what I'm thinking. It's just like, you know, 1,500 people is more than none. So, but someone who did get a lot of attention in August was Maxime Bernier when he started his Twitter rants about multiculturalism and everything else that eventually got him to just leave the Conservative caucus.
Yeah, he left the Conservative Party and went to form his own party with blackjack and hookers.
But that gave us great content for our 100th episode, which we did as an awesome live show at the Belmont, which is now no longer a venue, thanks inevitable change of the city of Vancouver. I can't really blame gentrification for that. It's on Granville Street, but I don't know. Feels like I can be angry at someone. But we had Shannon Waters at the live show, which was really cool. We had a nice little crowd there, and we got to talk about Maxime's new party and just what had happened in the legislature over the last few months. But then the next week, David Eby announces that we're suing Big Pharma. We're creating the like first class action lawsuit against pharma companies for causing the opioid epidemic, and this follows a number of U.S. states that have done the same. This is going to be a long-term project and effort, but we'll see how it pays off. But I think the bigger court news in August was that the Federal Court of Appeal came down and crushed Trans Mountain dead, to the delight of environmentalists and the provincial government, and to everyone else's, I don't know, chagrin, desperation, anger.
Yeah, maybe not everyone else's, but definitely Alberta was not happy. The Conservatives were not happy.
Can't imagine Trudeau was happy.
Trudeau was not.
Considering he just bought the pipe.
Yes. He was not thrilled about the prospect of having thrown away $4.5 billion on a pipeline.
This has forced the government to restart efforts to properly consult with the Indigenous nations who the court said were not properly consulted with, and they've had to start a new process to investigate the effects of the pipeline and the ships on the orcas in the Salish Sea. It still remains to be seen what the result of all of those reports and consultations will be, but
it's going to take a while.
Yeah. And this has all put Alberta in a very tough bind because they cannot have a pipeline. And they have been screaming about it since, saying, you need to get us a pipeline. And there's nothing anyone can really do to make it happen. You have to talk to people honestly and listen to them. You can't just push it through them. Like, studying what the effect on the orcas will be is a fairly straightforward process, but it was not good news for Alberta. In September, it was a surprisingly quiet month, except for episode 103 was a very busy one, because in that episode, we covered Bernier launching the People's Party of Canada.
Yeah.
And all of the inevitable mocking of the PP.
How are Conservatives so bad at this? UCP?
He calls it the PPC now.
Yeah, the Canadian Reform Alliance Party, or the crap party. Like, if there's not one person in their headquarters with, you know, a five-year-old sense of humor to, like, just look at it and see how terrible the acronyms are.
I mean, that was also the episode where Doug Ford basically went to war with Toronto City Council, and the courts had decided that his efforts to shrink it were unconstitutional, and then he immediately turned to the notwithstanding clause, because that's where we are in Canadian politics now. I mean, the only other thing that really came up in September is episode 5. You had a really good interview with David Eby that I had to miss because I can't handle my schedule.
So then in October, the massive subsidies the NDP threw at LNG
paid off.
Paid off. And LNG Canada announced a big investment in, well, LNG. You're in BC. So I guess good if you're making money pulling LNG out of the ground. Maybe not so good if you want to keep that ground kind of the temperature it's at right now. And also, we reached a trade deal with the U.S.
Well, NAFTA 2.0 is signed.
Yeah.
The USMCA, which is still an acronym no one likes, except Trump, apparently.
Not a huge amount changed. Some, like, minor tweaks around the edges and a new name, which, honestly, that's very Trumpish, isn't it? Like, basically not doing much, but changing the branding to be all about you.
They may as well just call it the Trump deal. Here in BC, the speculation tax was also unveiled in October. Cannabis was legalized nationally, but we only got one store open on legalization day in Kamloops, of all places. And like we said in the previous episode, we're only up to 4 or 5 stores in total now, including none in the Lower Mainland, so still not doing great on the legalization front. Episode 109 was a ton of fun for us. It was our special PR debate between Suzanne Anton and Seth Klein at the Canadian Club, and a big thanks again to them for asking us to come and host that. I've heard some feedback that it was pretty good. It did not actually meet the, I don't know, academic rigor that I think the SFU Public Square debate that Micah hosted or moderated.
Like, that was a really good debate. Like, serious, like, props to Micah and the team behind that, because that was probably the best PR debate so far, but, like, by far. So,
well, they picked all the academics to debate, and we were given the main voices of the campaign.
And it was, yeah, definitely more of a campaign debate than a more academic, rigorous one. But
I still think we managed to draw some value out of it.
It's definitely good. Way better than the debate that followed in the month after, that had Wilkinson and Horgan screwing off the first time in public on the television as they interrupted each other for a half hour and debated over just how lit PR was.
Like, our debate was just over an hour, and I felt we could have done with a bit more time and done a bit more with it. Their debate was half an hour and felt way too long somehow, because both of them were in, like, as chippery, like, I want to just talk in talking points. And this is after Wilkinson had been barking for 2 months about, I need a debate, you should debate me, why are you afraid to debate me? You know, we had a segment on all his thirsty tweets, and this is what we got. And I don't think anyone really came away. Like, I think Horgan came out better, but that's only because he wasn't as, like, grumpy. But maybe that's just because
I'm... Yeah, this, like, dad joke personality thing going. trying a little too hard, especially that if you're woke, you know PR is lit line.
Which is now the ongoing joke of BC politics.
Yes.
The fucking legislature tweeted out when their Christmas lights went on, the legislature is lit.
Yeah, it's been thoroughly killed, but...
And I'm not judging... I'm not hating on their social media team. I'm fine with them tweeting that, but that's the level of, like, dead that joke is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of became a bit of a meme, and honestly, if Wilkinson hadn't been so terrible and just, like, shouty, interrupty old man during the whole thing, like, that PR's lit line would have seemed really kind of forced and cheesy, but because of how it was contrasted, it kind of worked, which it shouldn't have, and, like, Wilkinson did not do a good job in that debate at all.
Well, Wilkinson was trying to go, like, hyper-specific. I could see where he was going, and Horgan was trying to say it at a hyper-general level, and they, like, both missed their target, because Wilkinson was right that Horgan didn't actually explain a number of things, and he didn't seem to want to be able to. Wilkinson asked, you know, how many votes will people have to do with any of these systems? And the answer actually isn't that complicated. Dual member, you have one vote. Mixed member, you have one or maybe two, probably two. Rural urban, it depends where you are, but you'll probably have one vote that's ranked if you're in a city, or two, like mixed member. But he's just like, you'll have a vote for the people who represent you. And it depends, and it's up to the committee later. And he like dodged it. And so Horgan didn't have good answers. Wilkinson didn't have good questions. And everyone got angrier at the end of that. But we did have a fun time at the Drive Coffee Shop on Commercial Drive doing that as a live event. And thanks to everyone who came out to that. The other bits in November, because that was not a quiet month, the federal government announced the details of the carbon tax and pricing scheme, which is now called carbon pricing because we don't want to use the word tax. And it felt like that was going to go better, but this was the year of carbon taxes going from where Canada is going to only BC can do it now, apparently. Because Alberta dropped out of the climate plan. Ontario elected someone who wants to sue them. Actually, Quebec is actually Quebec surprisingly is environmental, even under Legault.
Yeah, well, it's like, yeah, there's a broad multi-party consensus on it. So I guess that's good. But, you know, those are also the two provinces that 5 years ago were on board with it, with Quebec's tap and trade system and our carbon tax. So, like, in that way, it kind of feels like we've treaded water for half a decade.
And so carbon taxes are still ongoing debate and will continue for the next year. But right at the end of November, we got the biggest bombshell maybe of BC politics this year when this surprise motion was dropped on the floor to suspend the clerk and sergeant at arms, which was then passed unanimously by the House, which now everyone seems to regret passing.
Or at least not knowing more about it before passing it.
And no one knows why yet.
Yet everybody has gotten much, much angrier about it.
All we know is that Speaker Darrell Plekis has been having a sort of secret investigation for maybe as many as 11 months.
Ran out of his office by someone nobody knew was there, which is...
very confidence-inspiring.
Yeah. So, like, we're still, like, right dab in the middle of that right now, so... who knows where that's going to go?
I know. I think we'll hear his laundry list of issues in January.
The vomit-inducing list.
Well, no. The audits will be vomit-inducing.
And then, well, finally into December where the Clean BC plan dropped. And 2 weeks ago when you'll be listening to this, you can go back to our episode with Dan Vinalvovich from Clean Energy Canada where we break that down. But yeah, overall, that's like a fairly ambitious plan the government's rolled out. See where the next steps take us.
Yeah. I mean, other than that, December's been fairly quiet. Like the legislature rose towards the end of November or early December.
There's still like the odd like battle over the speaker clerk. Is there like a common term to describe this thing yet?
Like legislative staff?
Yeah.
Can we say that?
Yeah, but like...
but it's only two senior ones.
Like, yeah. You know, like a term to destroy. You know how like you have gates for like every like big scandal?
I don't want to use a gate.
Like this, I don't think we're at a gate point yet, but like a collective term to refer to this situation.
It needs a hashtag.
Yes.
Listeners, give us the hashtag for the ongoing clerk, sergeant at arms, speaker scandal situation.
Yeah. It's too much of a mouthful right now.
So that was the year in review. Let's look forward and go through what we expect to happen in 2019, or at least some rough predictions that then we can laugh at when we totally miss that other things just happen.
You mean when Jade Beat Singh comes like suddenly out of left field to become prime minister or something like that no one will have predicted?
You haven't heard my predictions yet.
I'm going to guess you're level-headed enough to say that's not actually going to happen.
Yeah.
That is the big thing staring everyone in the face for 2019 is the federal election. And I think the Liberals are probably going to win this one.
I mean, it's a safe bet.
It's a safe bet. I mean, there's the fundamentals where majority governments tend not to lose their first election after getting elected.
Yeah.
There's that. And like Andrew Scheer does not seem to have the political skills to upset that kind of long-established pattern.
I'm going to say it's a minority government. And part of this goes to the last talk I had at the BC Humanist Association, where we had Ian Waddell, former NDP member of parliament, who was in parliament when the charter was being negotiated, when the NDP were essentially the swing vote on the last Trudeau minority government, the Pierre Trudeau. And he said something about, you know, talking to the NDP right now and going, you know, it's going to be a minority government next time. And so it's kind of his prediction, or it's through him and things he was alluding to. And he might just be like wildly optimistic.
I think that's wildly optimistic because like looking at where the parties are now, like the Conservatives have basically played to their base for the last 2 years. Andrew Scheer is just mediocre in every single way. And like the things that he's done that kind of stand out are like playing into dumb far-right conspiracies about the UN and stuff like that. That just is going to be more off-putting than it brings people on side. Like, I just don't see a path forward for a Andrew Scheer-led conservative party to do anything but hope that the other party's votes implode.
The possibility is that, yes, Scheer does poorly, but also Trudeau has betrayed, to some extent, parts of the coalition that brought him to power. So a part of it was young people who were optimistic at this idea of electoral reform being guaranteed. Look for Jagmeet Singh to say, after he's dealt with this by-election, which we can question whether he wins or not, I'm going to say he wins.
I'm not going to make a prediction on that. It's just a little too much up in the air. Like, he doesn't have deep roots here. The Liberals seem to be putting together a decent campaign team to fight it. It's going to be hard to say. And it's not like such a deep orange riding that like is a safe bet. They can just say, okay, the NDP will pick this up for sure. So I'm not sure on that one.
But assuming he wins, he can then start his campaign because he needs to for the federal election. And he can start saying things like, we're not even going to do a referendum or anything. I'm going to bring in legislation to implement mixed member proportional because that's the NDP's favorite. And it's maybe not the perfect PR system, but it's a reasonable one. And it's better than first past the post. And he can be clear about a promise, which apparently Trudeau wasn't clear enough about. And he doesn't bring forward enough to bring him to prime minister, but he can pick off enough young people to bring down the Liberals in a couple ridings to maybe tie it.
Maybe.
It becomes a tough. It's a tough path, but I'm going bold in the hopes I can pay off well.
Okay, but it's definitely going to be a tough path, I think, on that one. And the NDP hasn't seemed to have found their footing yet. Maybe they will within the next 9 months, but so far every indication is they won't. And I think the Liberals will run the typical Liberal playbook, and Trudeau has his faults, but you know, when he's not bad on the campaign trail, I think he'll be able to do the traditional, you gotta vote for us to keep the Conservatives out. Electoral reform doesn't move that many votes. Like, there's a lot of things Trudeau's done that, like, individual groups don't like, but, like, in terms of a general move the public's opinion on things, none of them are far enough offside the general consensus that people aren't going to like it enough to really vote against him. And then, like, the fundamentals of Canada, you know, the economy's doing fine. There's a lot of worry kind of out there, I think, about where the broader global situation is, but in terms of Canada, people are, yeah, they're fine with it. Trudeau has a good foil in the case of like Doug Ford, which he can then like portray Andrew Scheer as kind of the Doug Ford-esque sort of thing, or at least make that argument. It's not going to be super effective, but like it'll to at least people who pay a lot of attention to it. But I think he'll be able to play like the moderate centrist in this in a way that Canadians actually tend to like. And yeah, he'll, I think, come out ahead.
But we both agree Scheer and the Conservatives are not going to win. And for me, that means Andrew Scheer doesn't stay on as leader.
I think that's quite likely as well. If Bernier was still in the party, I'd say for sure, because the Nyes would be out for it. I'm not sure who will lead the backstabbing then, if it would be, but like, I think...
Well, if Scheer does drop out, that opens up the opportunity for Bernier to try to come back.
I think he's burned the bridge enough on that one that...
But he can say he's burned the bridge with Scheer.
Yeah.
And this is a Conservative People's Party Alliance party.
Maybe, but that also... That also depends on him still being politically relevant. And one of my other predictions is the People's Party elects no one, and I do not expect that Bernier is going to hold on to his seat.
I'm a little more bullish on the People's Party's chances. I think they're going to get one seat, which is Bernier, because I think he's got the popularity in his riding, but I'm not totally sure.
Maybe, but...
I don't know Quebec politics enough, but I
don't know Quebec politics enough either, but like the last riding level poll I saw showed... Bernier below generic Conservative, I think so.
Oh, I do know he didn't win his... You might actually be right on this. I'm gonna stick with my prediction, but he didn't technically win his own riding in the leadership race.
Yeah.
As far as I remember. So you might be right on that.
So, I mean, he had like a decent kind of groundswell of support among the Conservatives in the last round, but like I think enough's happened that it's... Bernier needs to show that he... If he's outside the tent, he's going to hurt the Conservatives. Whereas I think where he'll be after the next election is just
unemployed.
A non-entity. So
fair.
I don't think he's going to over. I mean, if the Conservatives are smart, they'll let someone like a Aaron O'Toole or kind of in that vein. The base has not shown that same level of desire to put electability over like just being as conservative as possible. So. Who knows if another election loss will change that?
I mean, perceived electability isn't the benefit that it used to be in politics, at least around the world. Like, maybe it still is in Canada, and we'll see. But, like, the perceived electability in, like, UK Labour kept telling them, don't put Corbyn in. And then he did much better than Labour has done in a long time. Like, he still didn't win.
But he had a massive gain. Yeah.
Despite his party hating him. So, I don't know. Trump wasn't electable, but he won.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what the fuck we're doing here.
Both of them lost the popular vote. The fact that British politics is such a shit show and you can't actually take that and put yourself over the finish line on that. Yeah.
Where I think we have agreement is we're both pretty bullish on the Green Party of Canada's chances in the next federal election. Neither of us are actually really big Green Party supporters, but we do think can pick up a second seat.
I like the platonic idea of a Green Party much, much better than Green Parties are in practice.
Yeah, talking about grassroots democracy, environmentalism, balancing all these different priorities.
Instead, they just tend to be kind of a little nutty on at least one policy area.
Yeah.
I think the ones that manage it the best are probably the provincial Greens. The local Greens here are terrible. The Elizabeth May has some weird ideas around Wi-Fi and smart meters and everything. So.
And receipts. I don't think I've told that story.
You have on the podcast.
On the podcast, have I? Yeah, she doesn't want to touch receipts because they contain carcinogens.
This was when you were sitting beside her on an airplane, right?
Yeah, when I randomly got sat beside her. She's super nice.
Yes, but
She bought me a pup.
I'm more pointing out the fact that airplanes have higher radiation levels than you do at the ground level because you're flying higher up in the atmosphere and there's less of it. I'm just saying... Like,
are you saying she got a greater chance of cancer by being on the plane than by not touching the receipt from...
I'm pretty sure that's what I'm saying.
We both think they'll get at least one more MP. I would say probably in the Guelph area.
Guelph or South Island?
Yeah.
South Vancouver Island. I could see them maybe... They did fairly well in a couple of the Victoria area ridings. I think they finished second in at least one of them.
Potentially. My other half of the prediction, and I hesitate to make this because it's weird to say they will double their caucus at the same time as I think Elizabeth May might resign from federal politics or like start to signal a path towards that, because she has been leader for like 12 years.
Yeah, it might be time to.
And, or it'll be 13 years by that time. And so
I can see that.
It's both, on the one hand, it's time to leave and make room for a new generation of federal Greens. But also, if she does win that second seat, if the caucus does double, like we're both predicting, it seems like she's the path. But she's not that old. She's 64, which I'm saying is not that old when you look at the fact Bernie and Trump are still being talked about as the competition for the next presidential election. They're both mid-70s.
Which is weird. Also, Biden.
And Biden.
Biden's significantly outpolling Bernie at the moment. Yeah, anyway, American politics, you need to stop just voting for boomers and actually let the next generation in. But we'll get to America in a bit. And the final one on the federal level, before we move on to provincial politics, is I'm going to say there's going to be a cabinet shuffle this winter. The pre-election cabinet shuffle, where, you know, maybe some of the dead weight gets shuffled away and they kind of take the technocrats a little out of the forefront and put in the, you know, the happy warriors.
I'm going to disagree. I think the time to do that would have been this fall or just before this fall, because there's so little parliamentary time left. There's like one half session, essentially.
Yeah, but you get to make a bunch of funding announcements in like the year leading up to the election and everything. And you want your kind of best public-facing MPs in that rather than the person you trust to actually manage the department more than who might not be a great, like, talking to the press person.
There anyone who's going to get pulled out that you think? Clearly not more no, since we were wrong last year.
Yeah. I'm not sure who would be getting shuffled. I'm not going to make any predictions on that.
And, like, they need Vancouver Granville and some of these downtown ridings, so Jody Wilson-Raybould's probably fine and...
Yeah, Vancouver South's Harjeet Sajjan is fine too.
Yeah, you look at that cabinet and it's hard to know. Maybe, we'll see. Let's move to the provinces. There's two provincial elections next year. There's Alberta and PEI. Starting with PEI, I think I'm going to go bold and I think the Greens can take it. And I base this on their polling numbers, the fact they're polling almost 40% right now, which is incredible. Yeah, it's like high 30s. And also listening to the latest Canada Land Commons on corruption, which the whole series is fantastic with Archie Mann. He highlights how fucked up PEI's political culture at the provincial level has gotten with their attempts to bring all the online gaming of Canada to their province, but like in the most obviously corrupt ways. And so no one trusts the Liberals or Conservatives there. So the Greens feel like a palate cleanser for them. And that's how I can see it happening. And why not? Let the Greens
run. If they're going to break through anywhere, that's probably it.
Let it be the Emerald Island. Well, let's go over to Alberta. What do you think will happen?
Kenny's the most likely to win. So I'm going to say that. But like, I don't think he has this one in the bag. I don't know, like two-thirds chance he wins. The chance that there's a bozo eruption and Notley can play like the not insane party role in this, it might be enough to overcome the advantage Kenny has thrown into it.
I agree. Kenny has the advantage, but I still want to give Notley, maybe it's just naive hope, the chance that she'll at least hold out a minority, perhaps, you know, held up with like a Liberal and Alberta Party seat, because I don't know if they can pull more than one each, but it'll be a BC type situation where it's like tied, where somehow the NDP has won every seat in Calgary and Edmonton, and this is getting a really hard map to draw. But, you know, the NDP minority pulls through, and it will fall down a lot on giant bozo eruptions that Kenny has apparently no ability to control. I mean, I'm probably going to be wrong, but maybe this is just, I don't want him to win.
Yeah, well, there will almost certainly be a bozo eruption. The only question is,
can he deal with it?
How damaging will it be?
Yeah.
Well, moving over to BC, I'm going to say with all the current kerfuffle in the legislature that Plekis will not resign. He's still going to be speaker at the end of the year.
That seems fair. He's stubborn as all hell, it turns out. And while he might shoot his mouth off needlessly,
I think he's acquitted himself very well in the last month, but unless something really damaging comes out, I think he's safe for now.
And I think based on that, and Nanaimo probably staying in the NDP's hands and the Greens still supporting the NDPs and the fact that this is probably the most power they'll ever have, whether PR has won or not. I think we're both fairly confident this government's going to last another year.
Yep.
I mean, if we're wrong, that means a ton more content, so that's great.
Yeah, hey, we really grew in 2017 in the aftermath of the provincial election and the uncertainty over who had the confidence of the House. So, you know what? It might not be great for like political stability, but it will be great for the podcast. Yeah, overall, government's not going to fail. But what I do think is going to happen is that the recall campaigns, the three of them that are underway or people are trying to make happen, are going to fail because, well, it's practically impossible to get, was it 60% of?
You need 40% of the voters.
40% of the voters to sign on to a recall campaign to even trigger the vote. So
you essentially need more people to sign on to a campaign than voted for any of the candidates in a riding.
Yeah. So Davey Deeby, he's going to be safe. Rich Coleman's going to be safe. And Daryl Pletkus, also safe.
I would be surprised if any of these campaigns actually got off the ground the way they look right now. Maybe the one against Eby will get off the ground, but it'll do bad.
Yeah. EB's the most likely one because there is a fair bit of resources in Vancouver Point Grey.
Going back to the controversies at the, legislative staff, we're still looking for the hashtag. I think we will see RCMP start to file charges, potentially even against the Sergeant-at-Arms themselves, or the suspended ones. I guess
they're still technically in those positions, just on leave with pay.
Yeah. I don't know what charges we'll see. I'm not going to speculate on that, but, and I'm going to say that I don't think LNG Canada breaks ground on its proposed project. It seems like it has some of the support, but given the federal government's tanker ban for the North Shore and the Green Party's insistence and just how much effort it takes to get a mega project like that going, it's going to be at least 2020 before we see that start to move forward.
And my final prediction at the provincial level is that the BCTF negotiations are going to get a little contentious this year. I don't think they're going to have the smooth sailing they've had with the other labor negotiations.
Yeah. I'm going to say this, even though the result may be announced by the time this goes live, but I think BC is going to go to mixed member proportional. I think the Liberals are going to try to launch some kind of lawsuit against it, claiming that, 10% of the population can't choose the electoral system of the province.
It's going to fail.
And I think that's going to fail because the government can just impose an electoral system and has done so in the past.
Yeah, there's no legal requirement to have a referendum beyond the statute that they put in place in order to have this referendum.
Yeah.
But there's no constitutional requirement that the public must be consulted directly via referendum that must have, such percentage of people vote in favor of it. So overall, yeah, not something that's likely to happen if it goes to a lawsuit. Turns to PR, we will probably know the results by the time this podcast comes out, but I'm going to say PR is going to squeak through, but a very thin margin, 51 to 49.
I mean, Andrew Weaver's put out his prediction of 52-48, so you're in a good company with him.
Maybe even 50.5 to 49.5.
Ooh, rounding errors. Well, let's go to American / international politics. Will Donald Trump get impeached next year?
No, mostly because you need, a two-thirds vote in the Senate, and I don't think they even have a simple majority in the Senate right now that will vote to impeach it. Maybe something damning comes out from the Mueller investigation, but it's going to have to be really bad for the Republicans to defect at this point.
Yeah, we'll see articles get dropped in the House. We already have, honestly.
But they're not even going to vote in the House, really.
Oh, I think we'll see serious articles get dropped in the House following Mueller reports. And I think those will be a big part of the debate. They won't go anywhere in the Senate because of political reasons, but depending how Mueller comes out, it might put the pressure on Trump to resign a la Nixon.
Maybe.
Because then Pence can just pardon him.
Could be. But it's going to be a tough go. And the Democrats will be thinking, is it better to actually bring an impeachment forward or run against this incredibly unpopular incumbent? It's really hard to say without knowing what's going to be in the Mueller report, and also just how damn partisan the Republicans are going to continue to be. Keep in mind, there were Republican incumbents who got reelected who were facing active indictment and got reelected as congresspeople and stuff. So, like, you know, what exactly is the line where Republicans are going to say, okay, this has to change? At this point, it's might be the case that Republican partisanship goes well beyond what we think's likely. But what I will predict is that a member of the Trump family is going to be indicted.
When you wrote this down, I said to you, that's probably going to happen before like this even drops on the air. Probably not, but that feels like, you know, one of those first weeks of 2019 things. I could be wrong, but with the number of claims and statements that are coming out just in the last few weeks, I feel like we're getting very close.
Yeah, I could definitely see like Kushner or Don Jr. getting indicted. Eric Trump, one of those. Someone who was in the room at the Trump Tower meeting.
Yeah, there are definitely going to be more people going to jail next year in the U.S. who are in higher levels of the government, not just obviously random people. Moving over to England, it's too easy to say it's just going to continue to be a shit show.
Yeah, that's the no points prediction right there.
I'm going to go very detailed because once I predict one thing, it kind of just snowballs. So I'm going to say the Brexit deal that Theresa May has negotiated gets rejected by Parliament or doesn't even make it to a vote. Confidence vote comes forward based on that, on the government that she loses. Country goes to an election. It results in a hung parliament where Labour is ahead of the Conservatives, but not a majority. This requires Corbyn to finally concede a bit on Brexit, and they revoke Article 50 because 3 months or less at that point is not enough time to try to find a good quote-unquote deal for Brexit. And so they revoke Article 50 and call another referendum. And fuck it, let's even say that referendum says remain because Britain finally gets its act together and says this has been a stupid way to spend 3 years of politics. That's my prediction for England. I'm going to be wrong.
But the only thing I agree with in that is that May will not be Prime Minister.
Oh yeah, and she obviously resigns after she loses. Yeah.
Everything else about that, I have no fucking idea. I was trying to map out the possible courses of action on Brexit, and everything I was thinking of was just, okay, this is like equally likely as any other option because everything is bad, and like no rational person would choose any of these options, yet they have to make at least one of those choices. So which one is it? Who knows? The only thing I can say is that Britain is going to have a crazy few months ahead, and probably a crazy few months after. And I don't know, if they're smart, they're going to pull the whole Article 50 thing back and go, whoops, that was dumb. And if they're not, which all indications are they're not, they're going to try and make the submarine of cheese that is Brexit work.
I mean, the pathway I set out gives me two chances to vote as a British expat, I guess. So maybe that's my bias for it. Yeah, it's going to continue to be a shit show. Crossing the channel, I think Macron, who's been pilloried for the last few weeks, I think he's bottomed out. I think he has a chance to actually really, and I don't know, maybe I'm being optimistic.
I hope he's bottomed out.
And he radically changes course, announces a bunch of reforms to his, you know, abandons whatever neoliberal austerity measures he's been trying to put the country on to fix it. I don't know how anyone fixes France, but I'm not saying he becomes the most popular politician, just that people aren't calling for his head in the streets for a while.
So, I mean, I hope he does regain some of his popularity and things get a little less rioty in France. I mean, as François Hollande has shown, you can always get more unpopular if you're a French president. He bottomed out at, what, 4%?
That's true. Yeah, like, maybe I'm wrong here.
So, like, from what I know of France, the possibility of getting ever more unpopular is definitely an option. Hopefully things turn around, because there's some reforms France needs, and, like, Macron doesn't seem to be a great, like, politician in the sense of necessarily knowing what will or will not spark significant backlash. But, like, some of his broader policy reforms aren't bad and kind of what's needed. And it's good that there's at least like one like vocal centrist pro-EU politician out there now that Merkel's retiring. Like he's the person who's basically leading the European project now. So
that's not a good sign.
Hopefully things get better for that, because it should not be getting worse in Europe. And
well, my next prediction is it is going to get worse in Europe. I wrote down more fascist type governments get elected, with air quotes around fascist, but hinting at the, you know, Brazilian election, where we out of nowhere, for at least those of us who don't follow every country's politics around the world, you hear about, oh, this like hyper authoritarian guy is suddenly president of a major country. But we did go through the list just quickly on Wikipedia of what countries are having major elections next year, and Greece could go badly. Ukraine is probably going to go badly.
Or at least get nudged.
And that's just Europe.
Aggressively nudged in that direction by Russia.
North Korea is having an election. That's big quotes around that word.
Yeah, I'm really torn between, is it going to be 99% in favor of Kim Jong-un or 99.9?
Yeah.
That's going to be a real nail-biter there.
But we did come across one vote next year that you're bullish on.
Yes. So, the Falkland Islands electoral system referendum, I'm going to say it passes.
What is the Falkland Islands electoral system referendum about?
So right now they basically have two kind of multi-member ridings, and they want to go to one. So they're voting on that. And right now the smaller one is apparently way overrepresented. So presuming turnout's roughly the same, and I have no fucking idea about Falkland politics, but it's probably going to be the case where the larger amount of people who get fewer seats in their legislature thing is they're probably going to vote for having more seats and more influence. So I'm going to say that passes.
That vote's on November 7th. So Falkland Island listeners, I don't actually think we have any. But
if you're in the Falkland Islands and listen to this podcast, do send us an email.
Oh yeah, we'll bring you on for a full episode and we'll just talk about this referendum because why not? Tell us what the issues are. Are you still against Argentina? Yeah, we'll discuss it. Until then, keep listening through 2019.
And that has been Politrost. Find links to everything we talked about at politrost.ca. If you're a first-time listener, make sure to subscribe and let us know what you think. Support the show and get access to our exclusive Slack channel at patreon.com/politrost. And if you have ideas for the show, feel free to send to us. Thanks for listening.